up the champagne. Pop. It's my house. Come on. Turn it up.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
And a happy Thursday to you and yours from the Dog Bowl in Berea, Ohio. Jason Gibbs, Andrew Gribble in for Cleveland Browns Daily here on ESPN 850 WKNR. Mike Dreamer spinning the dials and taking us through till 3 o'clock today on a rainy, soggy, windy Thursday. I don't know why I bothered to shower today because, frankly, I got one in between the walk across the street, having to park at the back of the parking lot. The construction coming along quite nicely here.
Every day there's something, just a new thing on the outside that you see. I mean, it's just like the fastest construction of something I've seen, and there's obviously a good reason for that. You need to get this thing ready and operational for training camp, but I think there's even been steps put in place for there to be a lot of this part being operational for when the players get back here on Monday. I mean, they're at a race against time, but I think they're doing pretty well right now.
Yeah, it looks good right now. Last time we were here, there was a layer of dust on everything. There was a layer of dirt and dust anywhere you went, even in this studio. Somehow, some way, dust found its way in here.
Yeah, it's amazing, though, that we've weathered the storm in here. Even though it sounds like sometimes there's like a jackhammer right underneath us doing the show sometimes, it's been fine. I mean, there were some rocky patches here in the office where it was almost too loud to even work in here, but it's all for good reason. I think there's folks in July are going to come here and be pretty impressed with what everything is laid out.
Yeah, and it's all designed to bring in the top talent as well. A lot of things catering to the players, and you know, new lounge in the locker room, and new player amenities to help them get on the field quicker. An aquatics division being put in. Some really cool stuff going on out here.
You got to keep up with the Joneses. I mean, this is like NFL. I mean, the NFL keeps making more money. They're going to keep putting that money back into the buildings. And even though you're not like a college where you have to like recruit guys, but you do have to recruit to an extent with certain free agents and everything like that. I mean, you've got to have your place looking sharp, and I think that's the goal.
All right, Matt Wilhelm out today. He had an emergency, so our thoughts are with him. Hope everything's good. But today, it's Gribble and I till 3 o'clock, and it's time for your OBM Hot Topics today. And if you don't like any of these and you want to talk about something else, we'll take your phone calls and your tweets as well at BGSU Gibbs, at Andrew Gribble, at Browns _ daily. The coaching staff, what is going to happen when everybody else comes back in this building? Because the coaches have had free reign of this building here.
Yeah, it's basically been like our department and fan and brand management and coaching staff, football, the entire kind of football side operations, and everyone else has been working away at the stadium. I just think it's going to be you miss almost the buzz of the office here, though. You notice it when you walk in here occasionally. It's just a lot quieter just because there's just less people. I mean, the cafeteria has been gone, so less kind of gathering at midday. So we're all looking forward to it, but it's been just, I would just say it's different.
It's groups of people. You've run into a pocket of people down in the media room because they don't know where else to go to eat. Or you run into a group of people in the main conference room, whatever the case might be. The construction is going on. The construction of the Browns continues as well. Our number one topic today is QB, still the Browns' number one position of need. When you take a look at the Cleveland Browns, you have RG3, you have Josh McCown, and we'll talk about his comments and what he had to say today on NFL SiriusXM this morning and talking about competing with RG3 for that starting position. You have those two guys. You've got Connor Shaw. You've got Davis. You know you're going to pick a quarterback somewhere in the draft. Does it have to be at number two? And are there positions of need now for this football team that maybe are a little bit bigger than the quarterback position as of right now, knowing full well this team is in a full rebuild mode?
Yeah, you know, I think big picture, the quarterback is a position of need for the Browns to get right, and I think that's been said repeatedly. You want it once you get the position settled, like you see a lot around the league. You look at the Bengals, you look at the Ravens. Once they got that position settled, then you can build around that quarterback and really strengthen your areas there. I think that is still the biggest need, big picture. If you look small picture, if we're looking at just filling out a team today, I think there are a couple that stand out to me a little bit more than the quarterback position. One of them being, I think, wide receiver on offense. I just think you need more bodies at that position. I think defensively, I think you need more pass rushers. I think you've got to get that position fixed and know what you have. I think there's some intriguing options at pass rusher on this current roster as it stands, but I don't know if you've got the proven guys you could put out there if you had to play a game today. That those are areas I circle, but I still think even in the small picture, I still think quarterback is an area of question because you don't know exactly what you have in Robert Griffin III, and you don't know what you're maybe going to get out of a rookie that you put on this team right away.
If you have four quarterbacks, you don't have any.
Right. And I think, yeah, it's been the age-old thing. I mean, there's a lot of quarterbacks on the roster. You just don't know what you're going to get out of them when it really matters.
Here's my argument, and Bruce Hooley and I were talking about it the other day, and he's on board with go get the best available at number two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you believe in RG3 and believe that he can be something, then draft a quarterback, maybe in the second round, maybe in the third round, to develop underneath RG3. And if McCown is here, then develop under him as well. But you need players. You need some guys on this football team that can start from day one. And why not go get the best available if Jalen Ramsey's on the board or Laramie Tunsil if he's on the board? I know you need a quarterback. We all agree that this team can't take the next step till they get a quarterback. But is the next step 2 years away?
All right.
Can you take the quarterback next year?
I agree with that to an extent. I just don't know if you can ever, even if you're not expecting big things for this season, wins and losses wise, you cannot guarantee you will be in this position again to pick, to almost assuredly, outside of a trade up to number one, where you will be picking the best quarterback available in the draft. Even if you win the number of games you expect and are near the top of the draft, you can't control how bad things go for other teams around the league and what their needs are in the draft. Or you can't control a monster trade like the one that happened 4 years ago for Robert Griffin III. You can't. Those are things that are out of your control. So right now, you're looking at the picture, right, at the situation. You are in the number two spot behind a team that does not need a quarterback in a draft with two or three pretty good quarterbacks that a lot of people are – there's maybe mixed reviews, but I think there's more positive reviews on these quarterbacks than maybe the negative ones. So that's where I disagree to an extent of just getting the best overall player and kind of forget about quarterback or put it off for another year.
And coming up later on in the show, we'll hear from Todd McShay and Mel Kiper. They did a podcast on ESPN. You can find it on ESPNCleveland.com, actually. And they talk for about 3 minutes. What are the Browns' best options now that they do have RG3? Some interesting stuff. We'll get their take coming up here in just a little bit. And we want your take as well. 216-578-0850, the number to get on board with us today on Cleveland Browns Daily. Also, Josh McCown on NFL SiriusXM this morning, saying he's looking forward to competing with RG3 for that starting quarterback position. Hugh Jackson has mentioned the quarterback competition possibly coming up at training camp. You know, it's realistic that Josh McCown could be part of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at the last couple of years, if he is here, I mean, who's played better at the quarterback position the last years, Josh McCown or Robert Griffin III? I think McCown has been on the field. He's been playing. He's been out there. Obviously, he's got about 10 years on Robert Griffin III. He's had battled they've both battled some injuries. Robert Griffin III were maybe a little bit more serious, and then Robert Griffin III just didn't play last year. So I think I think Josh is a competitive guy. At the end of the day, though, why he's valuable if he's back here is that he gets the deal. He weathered a pretty up and down awkward situation last year with Johnny Manziel very well. He's fine serving in that mentor role. He's a great role model for these quarterbacks. So, but at the same time, he's still going to compete. I mean, this is a guy that wants to play, but I think he understands the situation he's in and he's bought into it. And I think that's why he's been such a valuable guy to this organization over the last year.
The other topic for tonight, the premiere of ESPN's newest 30 for 30 production, Cleveland-born, Cleveland-bred, on this production. Believeland is set to debut at the Cleveland Film Festival tonight. It will air on ESPN on Saturday, May 14th. Our big questions today around this. The movie's getting a lot of traction. It's about 77 minutes long. It takes fans through the highs and obviously through the lows. And shows maybe the world exactly what it means to be a Cleveland sports fan. And and why fans are still as dedicated as they are despite all the ups and the downs that their teams locally have brought them. Why do you stay a Cleveland sports fan? Or what makes a Cleveland sports fan? We want to know from you. We want to know also, you know, your best Browns memory. You know, what drove you to become this diehard Cleveland sports fan, Cleveland Browns fan, that many of you, you know, that many of you are today? You know, I can remember the drive. I remember the fumble and bawling in my parents' living room like an 11-year-old kid. I mean, it just the highs, the lows of this football team. Every one of those 80s teams having the posters from Convenient Food Mart that they put out every week of Bernie Kosar and Hanford Dixon and Clay Matthews. And, you know, you're a fan. You're born into it. And, you know, there's that few years where when the Browns weren't here that I think that generation of fan might not exist as heavily. Mm-hmm. But if you look at anybody else, with the exception of people that were, you know, right in those prime molding years in 95 through 99, you know, it's just we are resilient. That's the first word that comes to mind when you describe the Cleveland sports fan.
Yeah, and I'll use two examples of why it stuck with me, and this is with the other teams in town. But, like, you know, growing up in the early 90s, I went to Indians games all the time because you could have your own section to yourself and you can go with your family. And
sure.
Basically, you know, it just thinking back on it now, like 20 plus years, people would just be with their own cooler and people would be smoking cigarettes in the stands and everything like that. Just like it's changed so much. But my Indians fanhood was not developed when they started being great in the 90s. It was when I was going to these games, these meaningless games in 1991 and 92, you know, just because that's what you do as a kid. And I think the same thing with me with the Cavs as well, going to Richfield Coliseum with that really likable team with Mark Price, Brad Doherty. I mean, they developed at a wrong time when Michael Jordan was at his peak of greatness, but that didn't deter me from being a fan. And I just think growing up in Strongsville, being around Browns training camp, that, you know, I was in the kind of the Browns went away in the middle of my, like, the heart of my childhood in 95. But, you know, it's those years before where Belichick took him to the playoffs. And even in the early 90s when things weren't going all that great too, you know, you still love Bernie Kosar and you just like coming to training camp. I mean, that was the big thing growing up in Strongsville. So those things are what stick with you going forward. But then you, as you get older, you remember why. I mean, I remember 2007, I was moved away for the first time living in Alabama, watching the Indians in the playoffs against the Yankees, the bug game with Fausto Carmona, or the artist formerly known as Fausto Carmona.
Correct.
With the bugs on his face. And I was glued to my TV there, but it's like it just stays with you from when you're born. I don't know. We'd need to talk to some people who move here and embrace the sports teams because that's a different perspective, but that's from my born and raised here. It's not going to go away.
Well, and I lived in Illinois for 3 years, and it was when the Browns last went to the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was one of those that, you know, that Steeler year when they backed in, everything had to go right. Mm-hmm. That game against the Falcons, I was flying home from Cleveland back to Illinois, and I'm stuck at O'Hare on a layover, and I'm literally the only Browns fan in the entire, it was like a Fox Sports bar when they had those Fox Sports bar themes, and I'm losing my you-know-what in the middle of the bar, hugging people, and they're going, what is going on? I'm like, seven things had to happen, and they did, and we're going to the playoffs. And then watching that Steeler game the following week when you thought you had them beat and then things fell apart, it's just you come back for more. You're resilient as a Cleveland sports fan.
And I'll just say I went to Miami last month on a vacation, and I wore a Browns polo shirt. I got stopped five times in five different places just from people being happy about it, happy to see that because they had moved away from Cleveland, but it's so rare that they would see that down in Miami, but people are just still attached to it. They're even in the warm and beautiful place like Miami, they still miss being back here and having those parts of their memory. So it's just the strength of kind of not just the brand of the Browns, but the brand of all Cleveland sports. I think it's about equal. And I, you know, it varies in popularity at times based on how the teams are performing, but I think they all are pretty high right now, especially with opening day coming up for the Indians as well.
We want to know your memories. We want to know what makes you a Cleveland sports fan. And give me one word to describe what a Cleveland sports fan is for people around the country that don't know. People in Cleveland that just moved here that go, how can you root for these teams? What's going on? How can you come back year after year like we do? We want to hear from you. 216-578-0850. You can tweet at the show at Browns_daily, at BGSU Gibbs, at Andrew Gribble. We're with you till 3 o'clock today. It's Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
NR.
All right, back here with you on Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Gibbs and Gribble in the dog pound today. Is QB still the Browns' number one position of need? One of our hot topics today. Josh McCown's comments saying he's looking forward to competing with RG3 for the starting job. And the cord that the one that seems to have drawn the most conversation, I guess, so far. The premiere of ESPN's newest 30 for 30 production, Believeland, set to debut tonight at the Cleveland Film Festival. It will air on ESPN on May 14th. You know, why do you stay a Cleveland sports fan? What is one characteristic that I guess would describe us all? Gribbs, I want to get back to you. You and I were talking during the break because I mentioned it. When the Browns were gone through 95 through 99, you know, just talking to Mike Dreamer during the break, he said, I'm an Indians fan. That happened right there in my wheelhouse. The Browns weren't here, and the Indians were going to World Series.
No, yeah. It was. I mean, that was the peak. And it's almost like when I'm like an Indians fan, I hold them to like this impossibly high standard because of what we all experienced in the 90s. And I'll never forget, like, 97. 95 was such a ride, like, such a fun ride that you kind of knew that what was going to happen in the World Series. But 97 is, like, probably my worst sports moment, like, of all time, just because it's, like, they had it right there. They were the better team playing, the Marlins.
Two outs away.
Who were,
yeah, one out away.
Yeah, playing the Marlins, who were just a few years old, you know, as a team. I remember when that save was blown and then they gave it up in the next inning. I mean, I stormed to bed just like crying, and I was like, I think 97. So I was like 12 years old. I mean, it was rough, but you know, like the 95 to 99 stretch was tough. And then, but I think the key period there was, I was back on board as really getting interested. As I think that 2002 team really kind of recaptured kind of the fever here, because I think people were excited when the Browns came back. I think it was really an exciting time, but just the nature of the expansion draft back then and a lot of the draft picks not going well early, it just was tough early on. And I remember where I was with the first win with Tim Couch throwing the Hail Mary against the Saints.
By the way, Gerard Cherry was part of that. He was on the coverage.
I mean, it was. I mean, I remember where I was watching that. So, yep. It came back, and it was just an odd time though, because from 95 to 99, I was a kid. I picked up the Jaguars as a team I rooted for because they were still playing all the teams I didn't like, and they were a new team. I rooted for them. I love Mark Brunell, Jimmy Smith, Natron Means. I was all into that. But then once the Browns came back, then they took a backseat for me.
All right, we want to hear from you today. We have full phones on this, 216-578-0850. We started off with Kevin in West Salem. Kevin, happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday, gentlemen. Just one word that describes the fanhood of us diehards here in Northeast Ohio. Honestly, it's misled. We have a strange penchant for being so desperate to win that we just lose a little bit of what it means to actually be a human being sometimes. I mean, we're not paying attention to the fact that LeBron James, and I'm sorry I'm talking outside of football here, but, I mean, that guy dogged our entire city. He's got Chosen One tattooed on him. Why are human beings being deified? Why was Johnny Manziel the topic of the town when Brian Hoyer was throwing the lights out of the joint? Everybody's like, when's Manziel going to start? Who cares? We chase talent out of this town by being blindly faithful to our teams. And I think a lot of times the media latches onto it and misleads the perception of some of the weaker-minded people. And it's sad, but it's just the way I look at it. We love our teams. We really do. I mean, my first memory, Cleveland sports, that was the shot. That was Jordan making Elo sink to his knees, man. I was 4 years old. I mean, it just...
That's a rough way to start your Cleveland fandom, Kevin. Thank you for the phone call. And we're so desperate for a hero. I think that's what media wise, that's why we latch on to guys like Johnny Manziel or, you know, LeBron James, even Kyrie or any of those players. You know, we want someone to lead this city and carry the Cleveland banner proudly and win us games and win us a championship. And
yeah.
I think we'll take anybody. And, you know, did people look past Brian Hoyer? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
it's just tough. That's why the infamous jersey exists, because the chase, there's everyone in the NFL is chasing a franchise quarterback. And, you know, at any given time, there's maybe about 16 of them around. Half the teams have them, half the teams don't. And I think that's why the Browns have been on the wrong end of that for too long now. And that's why you continue to chase that, looking for that kind of star face of the franchise on field kind of guy.
By the way, Robert Mays, staff writer at The Ringer now, but formerly of MMQB, wrote his last article for MMQB. And he wrote it on Jared Goff being the next Tim Couch for Cleveland and why that's a good thing. He'll join us at 2 o'clock today. Looking forward to having him on. I tweeted that link out earlier on Cleveland Browns Daily's Twitter handle at Browns_daily. Right now, though, talking fandom and what makes a Cleveland sports fan. Why are you a Cleveland sports fan? Is there a word to describe Cleveland sports fan? John in Dallas joins us right now. John, welcome.
Hey, guys. The one word, painful. I am 50 years old. I live in Dallas. I've been down here about 15 years. Diehard Indians, Browns, Cavs fan. I give Cowboy fans so much crap down here, and rightfully I take some back with a smile on my face. But we are fortunate to have three major franchises in Cleveland to root for. Some cities, some states don't even have nothing. But being that we had three, or have three, we've showed up to the dance probably 127 times, I think it is, seasons. And our date left with another dude. And we just keep hoping and praying every three times a year that it's going to change. So the loyalty factor is it grows every year, but so does the pain.
I can't disagree with that at all, John, and thanks for the phone call. I mean, that's we live for the pain, almost, Gribbs. I mean, you and I both were here. We grew up here. We moved away. We came back. And no matter where you live, people are just living in another city. You mentioned it earlier when you were down in Miami. You know, people come up to you and they just go, wow, you're a Browns fan. Like, when was the last time you went to the playoffs? When, Indians, you know, yeah, they're okay a couple of times in the, you know, since 2000, but how good really are they? And then, well, you lost LeBron James when LeBron leaves. And yeah, we are suckers for pain. There's no question about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I think it's the key word I come up with, and this actually just got tweeted to me as well, but is the loyalty thing. I mean, I just think the loyalty is a strength of this whole city in terms of what they'll do to support these teams. And I think, you know, even when, you know, attendance is down for one team or another team during given periods, it goes up and down depending on the decade, depending on the era. You know, there's still the support there. I think, you know, there's still people watching on TV and in record numbers or just tuning in and just keeping up to date. I mean, I've been doing it with I'll do it with I'm obviously at every Browns game and watching every single play, but I even on a meaningless Tuesday, I'm following the Cavs without LeBron against the Rockets in kind of a meaningless game and just following every play. And I'll do the same with the Indians this year. It's just the way I'm wired. And I think a lot of people feel the same way.
Well, and we covered, you know, we were in St. Louis earlier this year and the Rams obviously on their way to LA. I mean, St. Louis, I covered the Cardinals and St. Louis is a baseball town like Cleveland's a football town. I mean, they live and die with every play for 162 games. They overreact on everything for 162 games, like we do as Browns fans for the 5 months out of the season. Mm. You know, hockey is number two there. People like to think football is. They only cared about football when they were winning.
Yeah.
Whereas here, every sport year-round, people live for it. I mean, you would be hard-pressed to tell me that Cleveland isn't the best sports town in America when it comes to fans.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you consider the return on investment, I would say, in terms of the championships. I mean, everyone knows the drought that is going on. It gets documented almost to a point where it's like too overkill, and that's why, you know, that's when I worry about like this documentary, and it's like, are people going to be outside of Cleveland annoyed by it, or that they're sick of hearing about Cleveland's drought? Because it got to the point when, you know, we've heard so much about like the Cubs drought. I've heard about that so many times, and you know, then you start to get like cynical with it, and that's why I hope that this documentary does not leave that feeling with people outside of Cleveland.
Yeah, that's I was worried about it. I've had people that have already seen a special screening of it that were involved in it, and they said it's not like that.
Okay.
There are moments where you're going to be pained, but there's some amazing behind the scenes footage of the positives. Mm-hmm. You know, those times during the 80s where people were out celebrating constantly, in the 90s filling bars, watching playoff games, and you know, you talked about 97. I was a junior at Bowling Green. Mm-hmm. We had spots in the apartment. We had select seats. You would walk in for an Indians playoff game, and if someone was in your seat that wasn't there all regularly, you got yelled at. You were almost thrown out of the apartment. You were forced to find somewhere else to sit. We all had special seats. I went to a midterm. This was the ALCS. I had a Wednesday night midterm at 6 o'clock, and the Indians game started at like 6:30 because they were still playing like late afternoon, early evening games. 6:30 was the start. I literally sat there. There was a 100-question midterm. I did 5 questions and said, I got to go. I got to be in my seat at 6:30. I walked out on a midterm to make sure that I was in my seat at first pitch, because that's what we had going on. After every Indians win, we put the speakers on the balcony. We played Glory Days and Montel, This Is How We Do It. We fired fireworks off the balconies. I mean, it was awesome. And then they lost that game, and you want to see a room of grown men crying, sobbing uncontrollably. There were 10 of us. Not a word was uttered. Just blubbering, crying, sobbing. I punched a hole in the wall. I mean, it was very, very rough. Let's go to Liz in Cleveland here before we go to break here. Liz, you're on Cleveland Browns Daily.
Hi, it's Lynn.
Hi, Lynn.
You know what? I'm going to just tell you a little bit. I grew up in New York, New Jersey. My father was a Giants fan his whole entire life, Yankees, all this. I really was into all of baseball, football, basketball, and my first baseball game was the Mets in 69 when they won. I had never heard of the Cleveland Indians. We got here when I was about 14. And my folks got season tickets to the Browns games, and that was around the time of Cardiac Kids. And one memory of just being in that, I was at the bowl game where it was freezing, the Red Ride 88 game. Never froze more in my entire life, but never was so into and so happy about being a Browns fan. And then in the 80s, I'm a youth minister, and my job was in Fort Myers, Florida. So I had to deal with Dolphins fans. And, you know, my office was just full of Cleveland sports, mostly Browns and that. And I really took a lot of grief, even though they were fairly, you know, they were good. They were competitive. And I'll never forget, we went on a ski trip to North Carolina, and it was one of the years, either the drive or the fumble. And I was, I couldn't stay and watch the whole game. I had to ski and all this and that. And I come out and I go to get in the bus. And one of my kids, it was foggy. And they wrote the final score of the Browns game on the window. And I was so ticked off. And I just said, look, I said, don't you ever, 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 ever put that on there again. I was so upset that they lost during that time. And you know, I like to think that we're very resilient kind of fans. I mean, my folks used to, I would always say, wait till next year draft. You know, they're going to get some free agents. They're going to win no matter what sport it was. And I still feel I'm a big Browns fan for all of the years, and resilience, I think, is one that resonates with me, because every year, you know, I'm always positive that things are going to happen, and, you know, I feel it all the way up till today. I really believe that we're really moving in a great direction, and I think we have good leadership all the way around, and I really think we're going to start winning games. But you know something that really enlightened me? I watched the Pro Football, the Life Stories, and the one I saw recently was on Paul Brown in the very beginnings of the Cleveland Browns. And, wow, you know, what a great coach. Innovative for that time. And then when it all went down, when Modell bought the team and all that happened with Paul Brown, I thought, you know, I got a really good idea about how they started and how successful they were and how smart he was and how, you know, the players and the caliber of people he had. And, you know, Art Modell, well, you know, I just think he didn't really know what he was doing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. Lynn, thanks for the phone call.
Everyone's got a story.
Everybody does. And everybody has one. And I think that's what brings us all together.
Oh, yeah.
216-578-0850. Rick in Westlake. We'll get to you right after the break. Jerry in Brunswick. Adam in Painesville. Hang on. We'll get to your tweets as well. Coming up in the 2 o'clock hour, we'll hear from Robert Mays, formerly of MMQB. His last article for MMQB, Jared Goff being the next Tim Couch for Cleveland and why it's a good thing. All that and more when Cleveland Browns Daily continues on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Back here with you on Cleveland Browns Daily, Gibbs and Gribbs. Till 3 o'clock today, the Golden Boys from 3 to 5. From 5 to 7, Bruce Hooley. And he will be on the red carpet for the premiere of tonight at the Cleveland Film Festival, ESPN's newest 30 for 30 production, Believeland. One of the big hot-button topics of the day, what makes you a Cleveland fan? One word to describe the Cleveland fan, favorite Cleveland sports memory, all that. You're getting a little nostalgic today. That's what happens in the middle of the offseason, and on March 31st, we're 30 days out. We're also talking 30 days out from the draft, that is. We're also talking quarterbacks, and Rick in Westlake has been patiently waiting to talk about that. Rick, you are on Cleveland Browns Daily.
Thank you very much for taking my call, and as far as the memories, I think one reason why we're fans is just all the memories we've had. I remember as a kid watching Jim Brown knock over the defensive players, sometimes like bowling pins, and, of course, Brian Sipe and Bernie Kosar, although he wasn't fleet of foot. He was you could just see him tear apart the defense with his mind. So a lot of good memories. But one question I had concerning the quarterback, of course, you know, Wentz and Goff have had all the press. Are there any second-tier quarterbacks that you see the Browns are considering? And the reason I ask the question, my point is that are the Browns further ahead trading out the second-round pick for future draft picks next year and beyond? Because I don't think anybody expects them to do great next year, so they should have a good high round pick, plus additional picks they might get from trading out. So I appreciate your thoughts on that.
All right, Rick, thanks for the phone call. Thanks for listening. Andrew, second tier quarterbacks. I know you've done some homework here a lot with the draft.
Yeah, I would say the ones that kind of fall into that category too would probably, it's probably a small group, but I would say the Paxton Lynch, Connor Cook kind of group. Maybe you lump in a Dak Prescott in that group as well, though the DUI last month can't exactly help his cause, but he's apologized for that and obviously realizes how big of a mistake that is. But and then the name that you keep hearing just from because of the comments made by Bills general manager Doug Whaley and just the program he comes from is a guy like Kevin Hogan from Stanford. I think he's got the kind of the pro quarterback build, and I think the biggest knock on him is mechanics, and that's something that a lot of coaches probably think they can fix. And then once you fix that, then you've got a pretty good quarterback to work with and build toward the future. As far as trading that second round pick, it's an enticing question, not only because it's such a valuable pick and you could probably acquire more for it, but you also have to remember teams will have 24 hours to kind of pony up some offers and maybe fall in love with a guy that didn't get picked in the first round that they graded on their board as a mid first round pick, and he's still around at 32. Teams are going to be interested in that pick. I think there's always interest in that first pick of the second round because you've got a full day to reevaluate and really go after guys that you think have really fallen for no reason. So I think that's what makes that. I would think, you know, it's certainly going to field some offers, but also at the same time, the Browns can get a really good player at that pick. So it's a balance.
Yeah, and that's, you know, we've gone back and forth on this show. Nathan's even said, Nathan thinks that there's a better chance of them trading it and moving back. I'm all about trading it and moving forward.
Okay.
You know, I think if you can get someone in that 20 to 30 spot that stands out that can help your team, I'm all for moving up. You've got some extra picks. Let's go ahead and let's move up if you can and try to snag one.
Yeah,
but
you just wonder what the cost of doing business there is, though.
Yeah.
Any trades within the first round always seem to involve a lot more than you'd think that you would have to give up. I wonder if you'd also have to give up your third-round pick to move up 10 spots in the first round, because every spot in the first round is just so valuable. I mean, you remember way back when the Browns traded up to get – traded up to get Trent Richardson, traded up to get Kellen Winslow Jr. So, I mean, I think that's the cost of doing business on that day one is a lot more than it is on day two and day three.
You mentioned Prescott. You mentioned, you know, some of the other guys. Hogan intrigues me because I liked what I saw of him at Stanford, but I'm not sure, you know, in his workouts, and I hate this because I try not to take any stock in combines, but he had a terrible combine.
Right.
And I liked him as a player in college, and is the film, I should go off of the film. That's what my instincts are. That's what my instincts usually are. Go off of the film, go off of what you see. But that's in the back of my mind that he had such a horrible work. Like, it wasn't one of those where, okay, he didn't have a great thing. He had a horrible combine.
Yeah, and it becomes part of the puzzle because at the same time, the combine doesn't mean everything, but it also kind of gives a team a glimpse, like, this guy, when the pressure's on, is this how that guy's going to perform? And that's something that you definitely have to consider, and why you can't just write off a combine performance. But, you know, maybe that allows him to slip a little bit and you get a steal on him in the later rounds. A guy like A.J. McCarron, a couple years ago, he slipped in the draft reportedly because he didn't interview well at the combine, rubbed some people the wrong way. And now I think the Bengals feel pretty good about the fact that they got a few wins at quarterback and a potential trade piece in the years to come with A.J. McCarron because he's a solid guy and could help a lot of teams as a starting quarterback.
All right, let's go to Jim in Akron talking a little NFL draft. Jim, you are on ESPN 850 WKNR.
What's going on, fellas?
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yep, gotcha.
I've got a scenario, and it might sound far-fetched if all aspects come true, but it could very well happen. We're sitting at two. Dallas probably is interested in Wentz. So we go from two to four. They pick up Wentz. Now we're sitting there. If Goff is there, the 49ers, you know, probably want Goff. So we go down to seven. In the meanwhile, we're getting multiple number twos, maybe a number one next year. Now we're sitting there at seven. If Bosa's on the board, he's a beast, but he doesn't fit our defense. So the Rams, who have multiple number twos, so we would go down to 15. Then maybe we get the Treadwell from Mississippi, and we stockpile second-round picks and maybe a future number one or two. What do you think about that?
Jim, thanks for the phone call. If we make that many trades down, I might go to the 480 bridge.
It's just,
if we want to move down one,
I think
I'm fine.
You know, that was the strategy in place for the Phil Taylor draft.
Yep.
And I think it can work out great if you capitalize on those draft picks. I mean, it's a matter of acquiring those picks and then doing something with them. And I think that's where the frustration came with the Phil Taylor draft, because Phil Taylor was good in spurts, but he injury prone and then obviously out of here before even he's able to sign a second contract. And then the other draft picks just didn't materialize into much. So it's a great strategy if then you execute it further on. But when you do that, you just got to pay it off in the back end. And I think there's been mixed results. I think the Patriots have been a great team that always seems to trade down and acquire assets and get the most out of them. And other teams haven't. So it's just a matter of how confident you are in executing those late round picks if you're going to keep making trades down in draft.
All right, more of your calls and tweets coming up. A reminder, at 2:00, Robert Mays, formerly of MMQB, a great article on Jared Goff being the next Tim Couch for Cleveland and why it's a good thing. We'll get his thoughts on the Cleveland Browns and his thoughts on Jared Goff coming up. But more of your calls and your tweets, as I mentioned, when Cleveland Browns Daily returns from this time out on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
On Twitter, at Browns_daily, talking about fandom, of course, talking about quarterbacks. Gibbs and Gribbs with you till 3 o'clock. Kevin Beck tweets the show, hey guys, word is hope, the worst to first in the league. We think every year it could be us. And sports memory, of course, the drive. Our good friend G.I. George behind enemy lines. I'm a Browns fan because of the leg. Kosar playing on a broken ankle, says Cleveland. It really does, actually.
Oh, yeah. I was growing up during the latter portions of Bernie's career here, and it's still, though. I mean, the popularity that he's had and continues to have, I mean, just shows you get a great quarterback in here. I think that's why you hear a lot of players talk about that. You know, you can come back, and if you win here, you're the guy forever. I mean, that's the appeal that Cleveland has. Even though when some people talk about, oh, why would these free agents come to Cleveland? I think that they see, you know, the lure of turning things around. And I think we've heard that a lot from Hugh Jackson. I think he knows if he gets this thing turned around, I mean, this is a big accomplishment and he'll be loved forever.
Yeah, and it starts at that quarterback position. And one of the topics we've had today, you know, with RG3, is quarterback still your main target here going into the draft? And we've had some mixed results. We go back to Dan in Hershey, PA on Cleveland Browns Daily. Dan, welcome.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I think Tony Grossi put it best the other day for me. He said, I don't live in Cleveland. I live in, you know, in Pennsylvania, but I will find a bridge somewhere. And if we don't pick a quarterback, you'll probably feel the earth shake when I fall to my death. If we don't take one at number two, I mean, we got to get this right.
Which quarterback do you want?
I personally like Jared Goff. The reason I like him is he's younger. He's played a higher brand of competition in California. He started more games. I really like his accuracy, but from watching the tape on both these guys, the thing that I really liked about him was the fact that I saw him hang in there when he knew he was going to get hit and throw the ball accurately anyway. And take. He seemed like a tough guy. I think if you don't have that quality in the NFL, it's difficult to make it. You know, he's obviously a smart guy as well.
Yeah, Dan, thanks for the phone call, and he's right. I mean, and we'll talk to Robert Mays about that. Bruce Arians said it himself in the article that we're going to talk about. Arians said, Tim Couch had been a heck of a quarterback if he hadn't dropped 56 times in year one.
Yeah, a similar case around the NFL, too, would be the David Carr in Houston. We don't know how good he could have been. I mean, I feel like he got hit even more than Couch did his first season with the Texans. I mean, it's a tough spot to be put in, but the thing to like about Goff is that, you know, his offensive line at Cal was not great. And I think he had to deal with that. And I think that was a part of the reason. I don't think he was going to just throw his O-line under the bus. But I think when there was the concern about his fumbles early in his career, you get hit enough, you're probably going to fumble the ball. I mean, there's some angles where you're going to get hit where there's nothing you can do about it. And I think a lot of those fumbles were caused by that, but he got better at it. I think his line got better, his team got better, and then they won more games, and he had a career year.
Let's go to Adam in Painesville. Adam, you're on Cleveland Browns Daily.
What's up, Gibbs and Gribbs? How you guys doing?
Good, great, buddy.
Good, good. Hey, actually, just you guys just brought out some really good memories. Just wanted to share a couple with you. But I consider us protective, as in we can speak poorly of our family, but no one outside of Cleveland can. So very protective as fans. I think we are, and it's a good thing. So, but I remember spring practices, you know, summer training at Lakeland Community College.
Oh, yes.
I went there, and I mean, Gibbs, me and you were about the same age. I was a junior in 97 in college. And, I mean, I just remember going there, and you got to go up and, like, literally shake hands with every player. It was great. So, and the last game I went to was with my father at Old Muni, was when Metcalf ran back two punts against Pittsburgh.
I remember watching that game.
Yeah, I was
one of the best. One of the best individual efforts, maybe in Browns history.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And just one more thing, I remember when the few times that the Browns were blacked out and we'd have to all go to a bar. And I remember my dad taking us to a bar, me and my brother sitting like behind the bar on the floor, and everyone just going crazy. But we were, you know, 9, 8, 9 at that time. So he's like, "You're coming with us." So just good times, man. Hope you guys have a good show, and thanks for everything.
You got it, Adam. Thanks for the phone call. Oh, yeah, I remember my father taking me to Browns games going, you know, my family's had season tickets since 1948, and he said, "You're going to see some things. You're going to hear some things. You repeat any of this in front of your mother, you will never go to another game again."
No, and that he brought up a good point with the blackout memories. I mean, you had those throughout the 90s, and that was really unfortunate, and you would almost it reached the point where you started looking forward to the fact when the Browns were on the road. You know, because you knew it was guaranteed to be on TV, but you always found a way to get around a TV somehow, even if it wasn't going to be playing in your house. I remember, I can't remember correctly or not. Was the last game here blacked out on TV?
I was in college.
Yeah, so I can't remember
that was,
exactly.
That was my freshman year in college. And it was so weird because the Browns were leaving, and you didn't grasp it because you weren't in Cleveland. Maybe for me, I didn't grasp it as much. Because also, that was the year the Indians were in the World Series.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was the whole Tony Pena walk-off in the 15th against Boston and working your way, you know, you get past Seattle and you get to Atlanta. And, you know, again, I wasn't living. I was in Bowling Green, and it's only 2 hours away, but it's still far enough away that you're not in the day-to-day know, and you're living on the Indians during that time. So I don't remember if the last game was blacked out or not. I don't believe so. I believe it was nationally televised. Bob Costas and the whole crew were here for that last home game.
Okay.
Yeah, NBC like brought their whole crew. Everything was live from outside a Municipal Stadium.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess I was too young to remember that correctly. I just know that friends of my sister's at the time came home with a few rows of seats.
Yeah, there are a couple mementos that we have as well. Probably won't talk about that anymore, but there were some things more than seats that we ended up taking out. I know that my uncles went in with tools and you name it. So yeah. We have a couple different things. 216-578-0850. Tweet at the show at Browns_daily. More of your calls, more of your tweets. We will get to them, I promise. But coming up next, Robert Mays from MMQB. Great article on why Jared Goff could be the next Tim Couch for Cleveland, and it will be a good thing. We'll talk to Robert next on ESPN 850 WKNR.